on today's shorthanded edition of Stone Cold Sports Talk, episode 20. It's funny, Jay. This is our milestone episode and our third wheel, our partner in crime. Well, not third wheel. We're all equally third wheels. We're very codependent here. We're a nice little like triangle offense. And I don't know what I'm going with this, but Taft unfortunately had an assignment due in 5 hours, was not able to join us. So it's just me and Jay going retro, even though I don't think we've ever done just a you and me podcast before. Have we? I think it's always been the trifecta.
Early days, maybe.
Maybe the early days.
Sophomore year, what is that? Fall of 17, maybe?
That is 2017. Wow, yeah, 3 years ago. So for the first time in 3 years, we're rolling it back. Me, Luke Stone, he, Jay Banzette, talking about college football this weekend. So this was going to be a special episode because not only is it the 20th episode, it's the first time that all three of us had skin in the game on the same weekend in a literal sense, because all three of our institutions are playing this weekend. Georgia is playing Tennessee. North Carolina is playing Virginia Tech, and Virginia is playing NC State. So I guess all four of the state North Carolina schools are having a little like cross bracket competition sort of thing going on this weekend.
Where are you going? We got UVA, Duke. No, excuse me, not UVA. Duke. Who am I kidding? Duke. I don't even know who Duke plays this week. Duke is beyond.
Does it matter? Iraq. They're just going to lose. Like, is it really a question? Yeah.
They took Chase Brice from Clemson. Okay. And thought they had hope because Chase Brice, you know, saved the day against Syracuse 2 years ago, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm very biased here when I say this. Duke contaminated the quality quarterback that was Chase Brice, and now Duke has a sorry football team.
Yeah, that's fair. See, also Malik Zaire playing for Florida in the McElwain era. Malik Zaire was a good quarterback, went to Florida to a coach who notoriously ruined quarterbacks, and including driving Will Greer out of the program, ruined Malik Zaire. This has been a rudderless first couple minutes. Let's get direction. Jay, do you want to speak for Taft first, and then we'll end with our two picks? So yeah. Give us Taft's breakdown of Georgia-Tennessee from the Google Doc we are all looking at.
Yeah. So last week, we know Georgia beat Auburn 27-6 in a game that really was not close at all. Georgia started Stetson Bennett at quarterback over JT Daniels, who was indeed healthy. Stetson Bennett went 17 of 28 for 240 yards and a touchdown. Georgia's defense and running game, though, that's pretty much the theme with Georgia the past couple of years, was the theme. Bo Nix, Auburn's sophomore quarterback, was 21 of 40, so just a tick over 50% in the completion percentage department, for 177 yards, no touchdowns and an interception. And on the ground, Zamir White for Georgia had three touchdowns. Taft said that he displayed great field vision, and the team as a whole averaged 4.5 yards a carry, which in the SEC is a pretty good number. So expect a lot of Zamir White and James Cook this weekend as they take on Tennessee, who has wins over South Carolina 2 weeks ago, and then they beat Missouri this past week. They're led by Jarrett Guarantino, a quarterback who's completed 61% of his passes and has no interceptions, which he also, those numbers combined to give him the 13th best QBR in the country this season. So, and on top of that, it's just a good old-fashioned top 15 SEC East matchup. So what's Georgia ranked? Third, and Tennessee is 14th.
Yep.
So this will be a good matchup. And a little history here. This is the 15th meeting between Georgia 50th. And the Tennessee Volunteers in what has been a very even series. Georgia owns a one-game advantage here. It's 24 wins for Georgia, 23 wins for Tennessee, and two ties. And Taft's prediction for that game is his Georgia Bulldogs will beat the Tennessee Volunteers 24-14.
I think it's an interesting prediction. I have Tennessee in one of my bets of the week. This game is in one of my bets of the week. We will reveal what that pick is later. Good analysis there from Taft. And like you mentioned, Jarrett Guarantino has just been really good at quarterback, 61% completions, no interceptions, 13th best QBR. He's been solid. Jay down in, is that in Chapel Hill or Blacksburg this weekend?
It's in Chapel Hill because last year, Carolina traveled to Blacksburg and lost in six overtimes. So this year is back in Chapel Hill. I'll go and start with the 19th ranked Virginia Tech Hokies. Our good friend Liam Desmond goes there if he's listening. Shout out to him. Their key players, they get a big name back this week. Quarterback Hendon Hooker is making his season debut. He was their 2019 starter.
Did he have Corona?
He was on that 23-man Corona list that they had week one, and they still smacked NC State with it.
Tragic.
So Hendon Hooker last year completed 61% of his passes for 1,555 yards, 13 touchdowns, and two interceptions, and he's also a threat on the ground. He had 123 carries for 356 yards and five touchdowns. So he will be taking over for the lackluster Braxton Burmeister, who started the first couple weeks for the Hokies. Burmeister completed 44% of his passes for 269 yards, one touchdown, and a pick. That's a pretty reasonable guy to bench. As bad as it gets, basically. And also on the running attack, Khalil Herbert for the Hokies has 26 carries for 312 yards. That is a whopping 12 yards a carry and three touchdowns. On the outside, wide receiver Tavion Robinson averages 21 yards per catch. And defensively, linebacker Rayshard Ashby leads the team in tackles. So Virginia Tech is certainly no team to mess around with. And then on the Carolina side, we obviously know about quarterback Sam Howell. He's been a little underwhelming so far this year. He's completing 65% of his passes for 520 yards, three touchdowns, and three interceptions. The real story here in Chapel Hill, which is really surprising even to me, has been the rushing attack. The duo of Michael Carter and Javonte Williams, they have 48 total carries for 313 yards, which is 6.5 yards a carry, and four touchdowns on the ground. And then De'Ami Brown, the wide receiver, continues to be the best playmaker on the perimeter for Carolina. He has 10 catches for 154 yards this season. Daz Newsome is a big name that a lot of people have heard about. He has three catches in two games. Certainly look for him to pick up the slack a little bit. He's certainly as talented as Brown, maybe even more so. And then defensively, it's all about Chaz Surratt, the linebacker who, in my mind, with Micah Parsons of Penn State opting out for the entirety of this season, that leaves Surratt as the best linebacker in the country. He has 17 tackles in two games, and he leads the team in tackles and sacks. He's just an absolute playmaker, will be a first-round draft pick come April. And he leads a defense that absolutely shut down Boston College. They allowed one offensive touchdown in the first half when Sam Howell threw a pick and it was returned to the Carolina 10-yard line. So they had a 10-yard field to work with. That's never easy to do. BC scored. And just going back to that BC game, I was listening to it on the radio. I'm not sure how Carolina won that game because we had numerous offensive turnovers, and like that Sam Howell interception that put Boston College in prime position to score and to win. And it was the difference in the game. It was 26-22. What made it a 4-point game was Carolina picking off a 2-point conversion pass and taking it back to the house for 2 points. So if Boston College had converted that 2-point conversion, the game goes to overtime. And the way things were going, I'm not sure BC wouldn't have won that game. So Carolina's got to get it together. I do expect the Tar Heels to flex their muscles for the first time this season and take care of business. I hope they'll actually realize that they're playing a really good team this week and they've just got too much offense. So I'm going to take Carolina 38-27 in this number 8 versus number 19 matchup in Chapel Hill.
Like the pick, good analysis. Virginia, the Cavaliers also in action this weekend at home against NC State in a packed Scott Stadium of 1,000 people, the four closest family and friends of every Virginia player, and the two closest family members of every NC State player. So key players for the Wolfpack. At quarterback, Devin Leary has been stellar this season in the action that he's played. He did not play their opener against Wake Forest. Florida State transfer Bailey Hockman started the first game, did fine, but then the wheel started coming off with Bailey Hockman in that second game against Virginia Tech, where, Jay, you are correct, Virginia Tech has absolutely demolished North Carolina State in that game. But in the second half of that game, once he filled in, Devin Leary was 12 for 16 with 165 yards, just north of 10 yards per passing attempt, 75% completion percentage there. If you can do 12 divided by 16, and then 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. The game after against Pittsburgh, who was actually in the top 25 at that point, Devin Leary was 28 for 44, which means a 63.6% completion percentage, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, and led the Pack back to upset. I guess that's an upset, right?
Yeah, Pitt was ranked 22nd at the time.
To knock off number 22 Pitt at that time, 30-29 in what was a very, very thrilling game. Kenny Pickett still the quarterback at Pitt? Kenny
Pickett is he's the Ian Book of Pittsburgh. He's been there for years, and yeah, he's still there. He's actually playing pretty well this year.
Yeah, I remember in 2017, the year Miami almost made the playoff when they were really good and undefeated, and everyone thought that and the turnover chain was back.
Remember,
and
they were number two and went up to Pitt.
They were number two, went up to Pitt Friday after Thanksgiving. And shockingly enough, who was the quarterback for Miami?
Malik Rozier.
Yes, Malik Rozier looked awful against Miami, threw a handful of interceptions, and Kenny Pickett, who I don't think it had a start at that point in the season because whoever their starter was.
He was a freshman making his first ever start.
Freshman making his first ever start against the number two team in the country that I think that Shaq Quarterman would have been on that team.
Quarterman was on that team. Trajan Bandy was on that team.
They had some dudes. We'll just leave it at that. They had some dudes on the defensive side of the football, and Kenny Pickett didn't really pick them apart. It was mostly just Malik Rozier playing horribly and giving Pitt great field position all the time. Pittsburgh won that game, but that's beside the point. In the running game, Zonovan Knight, running back for the Wolfpack, did not have that many touches against Pitt, 7 carries for 29 yards. The team only averaged 2 yards a carry. Now, through the air, though, a new favorite target for Devin Leary is wide receiver Emeka Emezie. 7 receptions, 101 yards, 2 touchdowns against Pitt. Including, I think, maybe there was a long bomb that won the game. I remember seeing that on a studio update. That might have been that one. NC State defense, not much to talk about there. Only forced 1 turnover on the season. They allow 39 points a game.
They gave up 42 to Wake.
They will That's likely make quarterback Brennan Armstrong very comfortable. Now, Armstrong was given about 2 of the most different opponents in the ACC to open the season with. Began, of course, with a – well, I guess it's a career game because it was his first career ACC start. Armstrong had a really good game against Duke in the season opener in Scott Stadium, including a couple really nice touchdowns to wide receiver Lavelle Davis, who we'll talk about a little more later. But against Clemson, obviously struggling a little more. 24 for 43, so north of 50%, but only 270 yards, 3 touchdowns, and then 2 picks, including one in the end zone when he was trying to find Lavelle Davis. I can't remember what DB it was on Clemson, but he went back, reached back, caught it one-handed. It was just unbelievable. In the running game, Wayne Talapapa, the running back for the Hoos, this is going to be his second, or I think his first full season of starts. I think UVA had some injury issues at running back last year that forced Talapapa in action. 29 carries, 142 yards, 4.9 per carry, which is a good number. And 2 touchdowns, and especially when you consider that he had to go against that Clemson front 7 last weekend. And then the receivers, Billy Kemp has really nicely filled the shoes of really the combination of Joe Reed and Hassiz Dubois. 17 catches, 166 yards, which means about 10 per catch. No touchdowns, though. Terrell Janna also, as a lot of people expected, has stepped up this season. 9 catches for 84 yards. He's usually been attracting the number one DB for who he's playing. For whatever team he's playing, which has left the door open for the deep shot guy, Lavelle Davis, true freshman, 6'7", 6 receptions, 159 yards, which means 26.5 yards per catch and 2 touchdowns against Duke. He was unstoppable in that game, and against a defense as bad as NC State, it is likely that he will continue to impress this weekend. The defense forced 7 turnovers against Duke, as we know. Nick Jackson and Zane Zandier have combined for 46 tackles. Defensive lineman Richard Burney has 2 sacks on the year. As we all know, Charles Snowden is an extraordinarily versatile linebacker. And then Joey Blunt in the secondary, fully healthy again. This defense played about as well as someone can reasonably expect against Trevor Lawrence and Clemson. I don't think it was exactly Clemson's best game. I wouldn't be surprised if they were struggling to get out of bed that morning, thinking about having Miami and Death Valley the following week. But needless to say, after getting blown out by Clemson and just absolutely embarrassed by them, especially on the defensive side of the ball, the Hoos defense stepped up this year, covered the spread, which is the very important part.
That's a common theme with Clemson this year. That's the Citadel covered, and UVA covered.
It is a common theme. We don't know if Dabo is betting on the dog heavy or if maybe Clemson just hasn't really been that motivated. But UVA, Bronco Mendenhall said it best after the game. There were five or six plays that had they gone UVA's way would have had that be a very, very different ball game and possibly even be close. UVA held its own against the number one team in the country, which is impressive. And I think they'll bounce back from that loss, but not necessarily an impressive. You can never really say the words impressive loss. It sounds oxymoronic, but I think Brennan Armstrong has been a lot better than people thought he would be at the end of last season when, you know, you have Bryce Perkins, and you're like, oh my gosh, like how are we going to succeed this? Who's going to possibly be the successor here and have it go well. But Armstrong is filling in about as well as someone could reasonably hope for Bryce Perkins, who was the best quarterback in UVA's recent memory by far. My prediction, UVA 37, NC State 24. And I think UVA could put up 45 or 50 too, just with how bad State's defense is.
For sure. Yeah.
I'm assuming we'll get like some pity Ketan Thompson snaps at quarterback maybe in the fourth quarter. Which moves us into bets of the week. I'll go ahead and lead off. We mentioned Georgia against Tennessee, also called the Gant Stelter Bowl. Jack Stelter, class of 2025 in swimming for the University of Tennessee. Go Vols swimming, not Go Vols anything else. As we mentioned,
let me insert a comment here. He's a phenomenal swimmer, but fantasy football is not his thing. If you're part of our fantasy football league. Let me just go ahead and say that.
He makes some interesting trades. He basically just accepted the Herschel Walker trade today.
Yes.
Except it was for a lot less than however many draft picks the Cowboys got out of that.
That trade set up the triplets in the Cowboys dynasty of the 90s, that one move. That was awesome.
We're going to start ringing a little bell every time we mention Jarrett Guarantano in 61% completions. So ding, there's the third ding. Congratulations for those who are following along at home. 61% of his passes are completions, and he has no interceptions. Running backs Ty Chandler and Eric Gray both average more than 5 yards a carry, which it's not like they've been playing the class of the SEC, but it's nonetheless impressive. Defense is allowing fewer than 20 points per game. That is impressive. I don't care if they're playing South Carolina and Missouri. Georgia had a bad first half against Arkansas, as we all know. Georgia will win, I think, relatively easily, but Tennessee covers. I don't know. I think it's going to be such a slow game. I mean, both these offenses are like basically, I think not leading the nation. They're not like 1-2, but they're both in the top 25 for number of rushing attempts per game.
For non option attacks, they're pretty high.
Yeah, they're very run heavy. It's basically like the inverse Mississippi State, but not quite as much.
Can we talk about Mississippi State beating LSU and then losing to Felipe Franks in Arkansas?
Hey, Felipe Franks has that game once a year. Anyway, my bet of the week is Tennessee to cover against Georgia. I think the score I said was – I don't have it on this doc. It'll be in a blog post. Nice little blog post plug. Luke Stone's College Football Superbook is coming back for exact scores. You can look there. My second pick of the week, the money line pick, Boston College plus 150 over Pitt. Pitt just lost. BC gave Carolina a run for its money. The plus 150 number is nice. I mean, there's a chance Pitt wins, but Pitt lost to NC State, so I don't know what that means. That if UVA loses to NC State, then our value prop for NC State is just going to be entirely broken. But I feel like Boston College could win against Pittsburgh. And now, my favorite pick of the week is anytime Florida plays, just bet the over. Like, unless it's insane, just bet the over. Like, the defense is awful. Like, well, it's not even close. The defense is one of the worst I've seen Florida have in a while. I mean, the one last year was bad, but at least we could like get excited about CJ Henderson letting a ball sail over his head and running down and turning to the receiver and doing the little incomplete thing when it was just because whatever horrendous quarterback we were playing. Like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of who was, I can't even name Vanderbilt's quarterback, but like that was the CJ Henderson stuff we were used to.
Was it a Shermer?
Yeah, it was Kyle Shermer. Good job. Shermer. Yeah. So Kyle Shermer like throws a ball into the dirt. So it's like a little 5 yard out and it goes about 3.5 yards from the line of scrimmage. And CJ Henderson was in the vicinity, even though the guy he was probably covering had a step or two on him. But the CJ Henderson classic turn toward the sideline, do the incompletion thing. He's the second most unjustifiably cocky player in Florida history beside Kadarius Toney, who, like, against Ole Miss, I thought there were a couple plays that were just going to be some DB or D lineman who just throat punched him. And I think it would have really changed things. Anyway, Florida allowed 35 against Ole Miss and 24 against South Carolina. Now, if you want to know, okay, well, 24 points isn't that bad. Here's some perspective. South Carolina's quarterback has torn his ACL 3 times. That is the same number of times he's won a game as a starter in his college career, and he's a transfer. Like, he was at Colorado State long enough to win more than 3 games. So one ACL tear per win as a starter. So either he needs to hope he gets benched, or he's just got to go 0-whatever, unless he wants to go through knee surgery again. Ole Miss, as we all know, 613 yards on Florida. Apparently, Matt Corral just confused them, and they were rattled, I think, by John Rhys Plumlee getting the 3 snaps he did at wide receiver. Florida barely outgained South Carolina. Kevin Harris, the running back for the Gamecocks, had 100 yards on the ground. And as we know, A&M's defense got gashed by Alabama, who, and here's the trigger word. This is going to – you want to just have this argument now or later?
Go ahead.
Who, actually, Alabama.
Actually, hold on. Wait. No, it's
in fact or fake news?
It's a later section, yes.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to say it and let the seed get planted in people's minds, and then we'll debate it later. A&M's defense, as we know, got gashed by Alabama, who put up 52 points on them. And Alabama is on the offensive side of the ball,
not on defense.
A comparable offense to that of Florida. And we won't go into the numbers about that later. So I think Florida wins against A&M 45-23. Gets you up to 68, which is more than the 58 they're getting you. Even if they don't, there's always a chance that it becomes the stupid noon start Florida barn burner where you're like at 3:15 and you're like, oh, well, Florida put that game away. I mean, they were up like what? They were up 27-13. And you're like, oh, shoot, it's 30-27 and Texas A&M has the ball in the red zone. No. And then if A&M kicks a field goal and ties the game, as you know, you hit the over. Florida A&M over. Sorry for the rambling, but Florida's defense just disturbs me greatly. I'll go through and hit the quick hits of Tafts, and then Jay will hand it off to you. Tulane plus 6.5 against Clemson, or against Houston. Sorry, that would be the line for Tulane Clemson for reference would be like -47.
It would probably be about 7 times. Then.
Yeah, good number. Houston's first game of the season because they just kind of had a coronavirus problem like forever, and it never went away.
They had COVID, and every team they were scheduled to play had COVID.
Yes, it's a classic. The classic. Corona. Yeah. Oh, I forgot he was there. Tulane dominated Southern Miss last week, 66-24. Taft says Tulane plus 6.5 over Houston. He likes Syracuse plus 115 over Duke. I don't know why Syracuse is the underdog in that matchup, so I would mash that number if you can get him as an underdog. It'll probably get down to a pick 'em at some point. And then at Louisville, Georgia Tech under 64. Tech offense averages less than 20 points a game. Louisville just under 30. Rain in the forecast. That could be from Hurricane Delta, maybe. Sloppy ACC game. Taft says under 64, Georgia Tech, Louisville, Syracuse plus 115, Tulane plus 6.5. Julius, your picks of the week.
I changed this last minute. And I'll go through both of them because it's a tie. First of all, Texas is a 2-point underdog against OU. That's disrespectful. OU can't not do anything right now. And I said it was just remember, let's flash back to last week. I said it was disrespectful for OU to only be a 7-point favorite against Iowa State. That didn't go too well.
That's what we call a whoopsies.
Yeah. I think Texas will win outright. They're a 2-point dog. So give me Texas in the spread department. And then this is the one I changed to. And this is so extraordinarily risky. I'm shaking saying this. Miami is a 14-point dog at Clemson. And I just got a feeling that Derek King is a baller. And Clemson's won. Yeah, they've blown teams out, but they have not looked like the number one team in the country yet. So I'm going to take Miami. I don't know. This could go very, very wrong.
Are you saying outright?
No, I'm not saying absolutely. I'm not saying outright. Okay. Have you lost your mind?
Sorry, when you said okay, so I guess your money. Are you keeping your money line pick too?
Yes.
You're going 4? Okay, cool. Oh, screw your money line pick. I just saw it. I don't like that.
Yeah. Well,
keep talking.
So, I'm taking Miami as a 14-point dog at the number one Clemson Tigers. I Derek King is too good, and Miami, you know Miami's going to come in this game motivated. They got literally nothing to lose right now because nobody's going to pick them because Clemson's just Clemson, and they got the best quarterback prospect in the history of the National Football League. But I got Miami covering a 14-point spread. I don't think they're going to win outright. I'm not sure anybody with sense thinks they'll win outright. But I'll take them as a 14-point dog. My money line, I'm going to take NC State plus 220 over UVA because I think this game will actually be very close. You got to remember, State just beat a ranked Pitt team on the road. UVA is coming off an extremely depressing Clemson buzzsaw loss in Death Valley. So I think – State's confident, UVA's a little down, and State's not too bad. UVA is good, not great. I think this game will be a lot closer than people think it is. So give me State plus 220.
You know, I don't hate the pick just because the plus 220 is a good number.
Yes.
Like, if you're betting that, it's a good number. And continue.
I hate doing this, but the Big 12, betting over-under on the Big 12 is impossible, but I'm going to do it again. Iowa State and Texas Tech, the over-under is 64.5. Iowa State has scored 37 points in back-to-back weeks. Texas Tech has scored 35 points in a game and 56 points in a game and 21 points in a game. So if Iowa State scores 37 and Texas Tech scores their lowest point total, which I don't think they'll get anywhere near close to, then you've got a 58-point total. That's if Texas Tech scores its lowest point total of the year. I think they'll score more in the 35 range. I expect something probably around the range of 45 to 35, 45, 38, Iowa State winning. So give me the over of 64.5 in Texas Tech, Iowa State.
All right. Now it is time for the Blast from the Past Sports Thing of the Week, brought to you by the Poulan Weed Eater Independence Bowl 1990 to 1997. Also known as the Duck Commander Independence Bowl, also known as the
Duck Commander.
What was the other sponsor in the Independence Bowl?
Oh, Lord. I don't remember, to be honest.
I think it was – let me see. We're looking this up right now. Independence Bowl.
Hold on, Stone. We've got breaking news from the NFL. Justin Herbert has officially been named the starter of the LA Chargers.
Okay, throw that in facts or fake news. I don't know how we're going to address it. I guess I'm just
throwing it in there.
Okay. It had the Advocare Independence Bowl and then the Camping World Independence Bowl. Not to be confused with the Camping World Bowl in Orlando, I guess. That's confusing as heck.
Camping World Stadium in Orlando.
Yes. And now the Radiance Technologies Independence Bowl. So this week's Blast from the Past Sports Thing of the Week, we were divided on it for a little while, and I'm actually going to change up the change-up. It is Ryan Mallett, the quarterback of the Arkansas Razorbacks from 2000. I haven't looked at it yet. I'm guessing like 2008 to 2012, 2007 to 2010. Fun fact, guess where his career started, Jay?
Florida.
Michigan. 2007, really? Ryan Mallett was a backup quarterback at Michigan, was 61 for 141, which for those of you keeping score at home, is 43.3%, 7 touchdowns, 5 picks, 892 yards on the year. Then I guess sat out a year, Arkansas.
He sat behind Chad Pennington, I guess.
Yes. No, Chad Henney.
Chad Henney, excuse me.
Chad Pennington went to Marshall, hashtag we are Marshall. Chad Pennington, also quarterback of the Miami Dolphins during their last NFL playoff victory. Of course, until 2022, when Tua Tagovailoa leads the 7-seeded Miami Dolphins to their first playoff victory in more than 10 years.
You're saying they're going to beat a 2-seed?
Next year, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
2009, Arkansas. Ryan Mallett played 13 games, was 225 for 403, 55.8% completions, 9.7 average yards per attempt, 30 touchdowns, 7 picks. Wow. The year after, as a junior, 266 for 411. Or 266 of 411 for 3,800 yards, 32 touchdowns, and 12 interceptions. And in 2010, he was seventh in Heisman voting. Also seventh in Heisman. We're going to go through all of the Heisman. We're going to go through the Heisman Trophy poll for that year right now. All right, at number 10, Owen Maricich, running back of Stanford, who I don't know why he – what?
What year is this, Stone?
Was he a fullback?
Was he 2010?
Yeah, 2010. He had 23 carries for 46 yards, two touchdowns, and two yards per attempt and five touchdowns. He had to have been a fullback, yeah, right?
He was. Okay. I guarantee you he was blocking for Toby Gerhart.
Okay. Number nine, Andy Dalton, 209 completions, 316 attempts. 2,857 yards, 27 touchdowns, six picks.
That's the
number eight.
TCU is number three team in the country.
Yeah, number eight. And we're not going to say anything about this. We're not making any social commentary. We are going to say absolutely nothing, because if we do, we might get fired by ourselves. Colin Kaepernick was a senior at Nevada. No first place votes, seven second place votes, 17 third place votes, 233 completions, 359 attempts, 3,000 yards, 21 touchdowns, eight picks. Don't know the rushing numbers.
Remember, they beat Boise State Buzzsaw that year, Kellen Moore.
Number seven, Ryan Mallett at Arkansas. Number six, Denard Robinson.
Goat.
Number five, speaking of busts, Justin Blackmon was fifth in Heisman Trophy voting in 2010.
Stay, what's the classic line that you love, Stan? Stay off the weed.
Justin Blackmon couldn't do that, and that's why he's no longer in the NFL. Number four, Kellen Moore, quarterback, Boise State. 273 of 383, 3,845 yards, 35 touchdowns, six interceptions. Number three, LaMichael James, sophomore running back, Oregon. 294 attempts, 1731, 6 yards per attempt on 294 carries, 21 touchdowns. Yes, that does average out to like 1.5 a game ish, a little less than that. Number two, Andrew Luck, retired, RIP, at least your NFL career. And then number one, New England Patriot great, best quarterback for the Patriots of all time, Cameron Newton. I don't know why I called him Cameron Newton. I thought I knew his middle name, but I just forgot. So
Cameron Jarrell Newton.
Cameron Jarrell Newton. There you go. Best quarterback in Auburn school history, unless Bo Nix does something insane in the next year. 185 completions, 280 attempts, 2,800 yards, 30 touchdowns, seven picks, and then, of course, all of the rushing numbers. This has been Ryan Mallett's special edition of the Blast from the Past Sports Thing of the Week, brought to you by the Poulin Weed Eater Independence Bowl, 1999 to 1997, also known as the Duck Commander, Walk-Ons, and Radiance Technologies Independence Bowl.
Advocare.
Advocare, yes. All right, so facts or fake news number one is actually not a facts or fake news. It is a note from Bo Watts.
Bo Watts told me directly to say this. Please do not talk about the Cowboys. We Cowboys fans are not emotionally ready, and I, a Cowboy fan here, 100% agree. It is a very sore subject. Got the best offense in the league, the most talented offense in the league, and we're 1-3.
So hashtag fire Nolan.
Bo Watts, and I agree with him, wanted to make sure that we did not talk about the Cowboys in a negative way because we're not emotionally ready, and he told me to put that in there, so I put it in there.
All right. Facts or fake news one. The University of North Carolina is legit in football. This comes from Woodbury Forrest Jr. Hard to believe he's already a junior. Bear Mangum.
He was in my PLC group, Stone. Think about that.
Wow, we're getting so old. What do you think, Jay? You lead us off, because you can definitely address this question unbiasedly.
Yeah, Carolina is the eighth-ranked team in the country, so obviously that's legit. He's a state fan, so let's put that in perspective. Legit in terms of the – I guess we'll go a little bit more in-depth. Legit in terms of the college football playoff. Probably not. Once we play Miami and get a little bit more and Tech this week, once we get know a little bit more about Carolina, then we'll be able to see. But legit is a very big term. I'll say yes, because we're a top 10 team. But in regards to beating Clemson, I'm not sure about that right now.
I would say yes. Facts. North Carolina is legit. And we will know that for sure or not for sure. It's still up in the air, depending on this weekend. And then the back-to-back grueling couple week stretch of Notre Dame in Chapel Hill, and then a road trip down to Miami, who could have full capacity. Like, that could actually be the most packed stadium you play in all year. And the crazy thing is, you would never say that about Hard Rock Stadium hosting a college game. Never. All right. Facts or fake news number two comes from Jackson Powell, who says Robbie Anderson is a top 15 wide receiver in the NFL. Now, here's the exercise I always find most useful in doing that. Name the 15 players better than him, and then we can both agree this is fake news.
All right. Let's throw out some names here.
Amari Cooper.
Amari Cooper, DeAndre Hopkins.
Yep.
Julio when healthy.
I would say not even include him in this, just so we can get 15 guys who are currently healthy. Keenan Allen. Yeah.
Okay, Keenan Allen. Make it three.
Tyreek Hill.
Four. Chris Godwin, five.
Tyreek Hill.
Michael Thomas, six. Tyreek Hill, seven.
Devontae Adams,
eight.
Stephon Diggs,
Thielen, that's 10.
Yep. Tyler Lockett.
DK Metcalf.
Yeah. DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, I would say.
Well,
I'm not even going to say Devontae Parker because you can contest that, but probably. Calvin Ridley.
Yeah, 13.
Terry McLaurin.
Is he better than Robbie Anderson?
Yeah, I think so.
Allen Robinson?
No, but we'll say Allen Robinson too.
That's 14. And then Odell Beckham.
Yeah.
That's 15.
Let's see. I mean, you can probably get other guys in there too, just to drive the point home.
Honestly, CeeDee Lamb is better than Robbie Anderson.
That's fair. If you throw Devontae Parker in there, then you're good. If you say Julio when he's actually healthy, but again, that's like a big if.
Juju Smith-Schuster?
Yeah, Juju. The Ravens don't actually have a real number one receiver. It's kind of crazy.
Marquise Brown is not – ask Bo Watts about Marquise Brown. He's not very happy.
Bo Watts is not happy with Marquise Brown, at least in fantasy.
No.
Sorry, Jackson. I'm going to say fake news for now. I do think the Panthers are an exciting team, though. They're interesting.
They're 2-2 somehow, some way, and they can't stop anybody, and they're 2-2.
Speaking of the Carolina Panthers, Jackson Curran asks, says the Panthers will make the playoffs. Fake news. Next question.
Hold on. Let's break this down. This is actually a lot more interesting than you may think it is.
Oh, the extra playoff spot totally makes it whack.
That's
okay.
What I'm saying. Plus, okay. Christian McCaffrey will be back in 2 weeks.
Yeah, but it's not like they've really dropped off without him. That's the thing. So he's really good.
Let's see.
All right, NFC standings.
They're 2-0 without McCaffrey.
Okay, so let's just say, can we draft teams into the playoffs right now that we like know we're going to make the playoffs?
Yes.
All right, Seahawks, Packers, Bucks, for sure.
Cowboys are going to win the East.
Yeah.
Make it four. The Saints will get in.
The Rams will get in.
The Rams and – oh, Lord.
Wow.
Just forget the East. Unless the Bears do something.
It's either going to be the Bears or the Panthers. Vikings.
No,
or the Panthers.
The Vikings.
What are we? Are we selling? Okay. Oh, Niners. Sorry, 49ers. Once they get Jimmy G back, probably right.
Yeah. I'll say it's fake news, but I would not be surprised if they're the 7th seed.
Yeah, I agree. I did not think it was that complicated, but the seventh seed just opens up so many teams that would never have a shot of like getting that back door in.
Yes.
Because if you were to tell me, if we were to go in the old playoff format, so what? I've got my four division champs. So my four division champs, I'm assuming Dallas figures it out. So you got what? Dallas, Seattle, Green Bay, Tampa for sure. And then New Orleans, and then either the Rams or the 49ers or the Cardinals are your next little grouping there. But the Cardinals have been bad.
The Cardinals lost to the Panthers last week.
Yeah. All right. Next submission is from Julius Banzett. Florida and Alabama have comparable offenses. I say fact. Can I explain? Can I give my spiel now?
Go ahead.
All right. We're going to blind taste test two offenses. Offense A averages 369 yards passing a game, 110 yards rushing a game, 479 yards per game, 22 first downs per game, and one turnover per game. Offense A also averages – hold on. Offense A also averages 45 points a game. Let me double-check the math. Yes, 45 points a game. Now, offense B, relative to offense A, is a 357-yard – per game passing team, 138 yards rushing, including 5.2 per carry versus offense A's 3.4 yards per carry. 495 yards per game, and they average 44.5 points per game. 25 first downs per game, 4 penalties per game, penalized less, and a half a turnover more, which doesn't really account for that much.
No.
Mac Jones and Kyle Trask are thrown for the same number of yards. Offense A and Offense B have almost identical stats. Offense B, which is Florida, averages more yards per game and more yards per rushing attempt. I say they are comparable. Talent-wise, they are not comparable. Alabama definitely has the weapons, but Kyle Trask is a better quarterback than Mac Jones. And yeah. Kyle Pitts is a better tight end than anyone Alabama has. And I honestly think as a receiver, Kyle Pitts would be the second best target on Alabama.
Behind who?
Either Smith or Waddle or maybe Mechie. Take your pick.
See, you're into the numbers game here, which it makes sense. Numbers never lie, whatever that saying is. But what I'm saying is when push comes to shove, I'm a defensive-minded guy. You know that as well as anybody. Aspiring defensive coordinator. Who would I rather defend? Kyle Trask and Kyle Pitts or Mac Jones, Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith, Mechie, and Najee Harris? Because that's basically what it is.
Can we stop regarding Najee Harris like he's like this messiah of a running back who's just like totally untouchable? His stats this season have been fine. Damian Pierce's have been a little better, I think. Let's look at the numbers for sure. Najee Harris this season is averaging 4.9 yards per attempt on 29 carries and has 5 touchdowns. He has 4 catches for 34 yards, no touchdowns, 175 yards from scrimmage. Damian Pierce, on the other hand, has – hold, please, for the next available representative. Okay, 5.8 yards per carry on 18 rushing attempts. 1 catch for 2 yards, 107 from scrimmage, but 5.6 on average from scrimmage. They're basically the same person. The issue that Damian Pierce has that Najee Harris doesn't is that Damian Pierce is splitting carries with Malik Davis, who is going to be a big name in college football this season. He's been at Florida for a while, has had some injury issues over the last couple of years. He also averages 5.3 yards per carry, 9.2 per reception, and 6.5 from scrimmage overall. So the weapons and the wide receiver stuff, I'm not even going to try to say that it's that close, but I'll just say this. Kadarius Toney, despite being 5'10", is one of the quickest guys in all of college football. Trevon Grimes is only getting better, and Kyle Pitts catches everything thrown his way.
Stone, in Madden, what would be higher, Kadarius Toney's agility rating or his ego rating, if there were such a thing?
His ego. His ego would be through the roof. It'd be like 110. They used to have ego in superstar mode in like Madden 09. I remember that, and like basically, I don't know how it worked. They tried to spin it as positive, which I mean, ego can be positive. We're not going to get into a philosophical conversation.
There's a difference between ego and confidence.
Yes. Kadarius Toney had – no, there's a difference between arrogance and confidence, and Kadarius Toney is arrogant.
Okay, yes.
So I think they're comparable. I think we're going to basically agree to disagree on this. Sorry, continue with your who would you rather defend thing.
So if I'm looking at it right, you start your game plan either stopping the pass or more than likely stopping the run. As a defensive, you want to make the opposing offense one dimensional. Stopping Najee Harris, albeit I don't really know that much about Damian Pierce. Najee Harris is probably the third toughest running back to stop in the country right now.
Behind Damian Pierce and Malik Davis, I agree.
And ETN. So stopping Najee Harris is difficult. And then when you actually do that, you've got Florida's Kyle Pitts is phenomenal. He's the best tight end in the country. I don't care what anybody says about Pat Freiermuth at Penn State. Pitts is a freak worthy of every accolade he's going to get this year. But he's one dude. Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle, they may not be – so Pitts is the best tight end. Waddle and Smith may not be the best wide receiver, albeit I think Smith can make an argument. They're two dudes who line up on the same field in two different positions. And then if you got Mechie to go along with him, or with those two, excuse me, it's a lot harder to defend three dudes in the passing game than it is one. And nothing against Florida's receiving core outside of Pitts, but they're not comparable.
I insist. Can we get a sponsor for visits from mom? That'd be great.
Clear sponsor, Clearview Financial, founded and run by Suzanne Banza.
No, you should have the sponsor being like whoever the president of North Carolina is. That is the reason that you're home right now, because he or she is stupid.
Sponsored by Chancellor Kevin Guskiewicz of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, who had absolutely no idea what he was doing over the summer.
This home interruption of coronavirus is brought to you by the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. UNC Chapel Hill. We thought we started a trend, but we actually didn't. Now back to our regularly scheduled programming. Yeah, we can agree to disagree. I think you're probably right that it's scarier to defend, but I think that, like, I think the real question is honestly just asking if we could ask Kirby Smart, who are you more afraid of playing, Alabama or Florida?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And I think he'll say Alabama because of the talent, but Florida, nothing against Florida, because they've put up some gaudy numbers so far. You as a Florida fan would know this a lot better than I would, but it's a flip from previous Florida football.
Oh, where it's
everything.
It's the total opposite of like the Muschamp years when you were like, okay, well, I mean, I like the way the defense looks, but Skylar Morningweg just played quarterback, son of Marty Morningweg, the former offensive coordinator for the New York Giants. Yeah. And then we have Davis Naw says Josh Allen is a top five quarterback right now. Facts or fake news? The trick is in the how, what does right now mean? That's how you got to frame this, is what does right now mean? Like, are we saying like this week he's going to be one of the five best guys? Or like, I get five people to have all, like, I get to pick the five quarterbacks that I would want leading my team all season long. I am going to say, I'm going to say fake news.
Let's go through it.
Here are the five I would take. Russ Mahomes, Rodgers are all easy. Then you can get into debate. I would still probably say Lamar Jackson. Assuming that we have an offense that can be run with the kind of weird read option, run heavy stuff, then yeah, I'm still saying Lamar Jackson.
Right now is the key for me. I'm going to disagree, because Josh Allen is outplaying Lamar Jackson, and frankly, it's not even close. The Ravens have the 31st best passing attack in the league right now. And on top of that, they don't have a consistent running game, because we know how all three of their running backs have absolutely no fantasy football value right now.
That's true.
So I'm going to disagree. I think Dak Prescott and Josh Allen are in a debate for number four right now. And I don't know. I'm kind of the belief. See, everybody, this is going to make a lot of people really mad. Switch Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes, and which are the Packers and Chiefs still as good as they are? Because I love Patrick Mahomes. He can do a lot of things.
What do you say? You say yes?
Give Aaron Rodgers, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Sammy Watkins, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and Mecole Hardman, and see what he can do.
Oh, yeah. Mahomes is a great talent, and I think he's worth every penny of the 10-year contract. But, yeah, I mean, I'm just to finish the point I'm assuming you were going to make.
The Packers have the best scoring offense in the league, and they haven't had Davante Adams since week one. So, essentially, it's Tyreek Hill, Watkins, Kelce, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and Mecole Hardman against Allen Lazard, who's now out, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, Aaron Jones, Robert Tonyan, and I'll just throw Jamal Williams in there.
Obviously, Robert Tonyan feels like a successor of John Kuhn from like just weird white guy fan favorite.
They call him Baby Kittle. Actually, that's his real nickname. So I'm saying I don't think. Oh, and on top of that, take away Andy Reid and flip him with Matt LaFleur.
Same team. Same exact team. I agree.
I think honest, this is going to sound really weird. I think Aaron Rodgers with Mahomes' supporting cast is better than Mahomes is with Mahomes' supporting cast.
I think five best quarterbacks. I agree. I actually think it is facts. I think Josh Allen is a top five quarterback in the league right now. There's a very different question. If Davis Nau were to have asked.
They're twins. They were in my Camp Cheerio cabin two summers ago. They're identical twins, Davis and Tanner.
If Davis Nau were to have asked, is Josh Allen one of the five quarterbacks you would like to have on your team in the playoffs down 4 points with 2 minutes to go? I don't think he's top five in that category. I think the top five for that category is Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, Brady, as we established, and then probably – I mean, Dak probably doesn't make the cut there, but like Breeze is probably still one of those guys where if he has 2 minutes and some timeouts and can just check down his way down the field with Michael Thomas, hit Kamara on the occasional flare route to get 17 yards and not have to throw a deep ball, he's still top five in that category.
Hugh Monstead might advocate for Kirk Cousins after the divisional playoff round last year.
Possibly.
Just saying in overtime.
But quarterback does feel a lot less deep this year than it has in the past. Like, we talk about this being the golden age of quarterbacks, but like there's a ton of parity because basically the way I look at it, it's like, I don't know, Jared Goff, Teddy Bridgewater, Jimmy G. Do we put Cam? I actually put Cam above Allen. I say fake news now. I say Cam Newton's one of the top five.
Are you serious?
No, I'm totally kidding. Cam has been great, but no, Josh Allen's still top five. But like, there are a lot of these mid-tier guys in the NFL right now. You swap them out for one another, and it just becomes like, it just basically becomes this whole exercise of they're like, you know, corporate needs you to find the picture between these 10 pictures, and they're the same picture. Like, I'm sorry, but Ryan Fitzpatrick and Ryan Tannehill. Tannehill's better. Okay, Fitzpatrick is not someone good to pull for this example.
No.
But like Minshew, Herbert, Goff, Rivers, I look at all of them as like the exact same, personally.
Herbert and Rivers are in a different game right now, but yes.
Yeah. Rivers is just – I don't even know. I haven't watched a Colts game this year, and I have no idea what's going on there other than Marlon Mack is hurt, and apparently T.Y. Hilton is no longer a target.
T.Y. Hilton's disappeared off the face of the earth. That defense is legit.
Oh, what? Yeah, I'm sure. Darius Leonard on your defense. Like, any question about defense, and you can just start with Darius Leonard. You've got me sold.
Yeah.
This has been a very discombobulated and very sad episode of Stone Cold Sports Talk.
We got one more question, Stone.
We do?
Our Woodbury class of 2018, Crawford Humphreys says UVA will repeat as ACC Coastal Division champs.
Well, yes, because there is no Coastal Division and it's the top two going. Crawford, nice try to trip us up. Facts,
yes.
They're repeating. They have repeated. They are the 2020 Coastal Champions. They just won't be in the top two of the ACC.
Their default.
Yeah. All right. Sorry for missing that. Crawford, thank you for the question if you're listening to this. This has been a very sad and somber episode 20 of Stone Cold Sports Talk without the third, without the other, without Taft.
Without
We're sad. Taft, we miss you. Yeah. Whatever that, we hope that paper or whatever it is you were writing went well. And we look forward to watching Tennessee cover the spread against Georgia. I don't think Tennessee has any shot of winning, but if they win, though, I'll be very excited. Thank you all for tuning in. We'll be back next week. Feel free to keep submitting your questions. You can DM our Instagram at SC Sports Blog if you would like to submit a question for facts or fake news for next week. I imagine Banzette's Beats will be getting back up and running next week as well.
Yeah, no, we're going to be going tomorrow, but I'm bringing Bo Watts on for some fantasy football insight.
Ooh, this is going to be very, very niche, but I imagine it'll be very good. Thank you all for listening. Check out some blog posts in the next couple of days. Stone Cold Sport or Luke Stone's College Football Superbook makes its much awaited return. You can get my exact score prediction for Tennessee, Georgia, if you look there. Even though Tennessee covers, which is, if you're a gambler, all you need to know. Thanks for listening. We will see you next week. Stay tuned for Banzette's Beats. Have a good weekend. Enjoy the games.